Hello, and welcome to the latest edition of The Letter Lords. You've been working on it, haven't you? It's very good. It's very good.
My turn this time. I hope I didn't disgrace it.
No, you did a much better job than I did, to be fair. And talking to me, hey, I'm Bob Fleming from the Proctor Who podcast.
And I am Jim Cameron from the Crinoid podcast.
And together we are the Letter Lords.
The Lords of Letters, if you will.
Yeah, and our job is to talk about the letters in the most recent Doctor Who magazine. However, as beautiful as the package I received through my door this month is, it doesn't have any letters in.
Yeah.
None at all. So, Jim, when we're presented with such an issue, which we are pretty much every month, we talk about other stuff. And the reason why there was no letters in the recent Doctor Who magazine is because they did a big special on the 70s with a nice comic book of the Daleks as well. Jim, wasn't it? It was quite nice.
That was great. Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about the 70s and maybe put in some sort of context with the 60s and then the 80s, because we're going to go a bit timey-wimey as it's Doctor Who. So, Jim, the 1970s. I mean, I was born in 1979. I'm a bit younger than you. I don't like to mention it.
No, I don't think you ever have mentioned it, have you?
I haven't.
I didn't know you were young.
I mention it all the time. I'm quite terrible, particularly on Proctor Who. But I'm a youth for a Doctor Who fan, you see. Or classic Who fan. So, Jim, talk to me about the 70s. This time I was not born in.
Of course, I was in my late 50s by the time the 70s came around. So it's a
You're
dim and distant
all right
memory.
For your age, aren't you?
Yes, I was but a lad, of course. Well, I was two when the 70s started. A time of very strange TV, even when you look back at it now. If you get a chance to look at any of the kind of spookier end of the stuff that was aimed at kids in the 70s, some very odd programmes now, with stuff in that you just wouldn't get screened now.
No.
Because it's just, you know, too disturbing, I think.
And possibly people are blacked up and someone's talking in an Asian accent as well.
Oh, plenty of that, sadly. Plenty of that. especially in the sitcoms. But, a strange time. But it's an interesting, you know, strange time to grow up. But, you know, a brilliant time to grow up for Doctor Who, I think.
Mm.
But in terms of what was happening production-wise, I think it's, you know, the first half of it belongs to Pertwee and the second half belongs to Tom Baker, of course.
Mm.
Barry Letts and Terence Dicks. Pretty much all of Pertwee's era. And I think after a kind of a slight, not exactly a full start, but certainly a diversion into sort of Quatermass territory with season 7, it then established itself, I think, in season 8 into pretty much what it has been ever since to a greater or lesser degree. So it's like Barry Letts and Terence Dicks kind of codified what the programme was, because we'll talk about the 60s in a minute, but it was kind of... It went in lots of different directions then, where it's kind of, I think, the 70s kind of streamlined what it was.
I mean, you could go back and watch The Unearthly Child, and it's still relevant to being Doctor Who. It still can, it still feels like Doctor Who. Mm. But I think what you are saying there is the 70s, particularly probably second half of the 70s, once Pertwee was able to time travel, that was pretty much, you know, Doctor Who.
Mm.
And obviously Tom Baker was... The Doctor, wasn't he, for a lot of people, really? Do you remember, because obviously when I was a kid, we still had black and white TVs.
Mm.
Our only colour TV was the one in front room, and we had a couple of black and white ones.
Right.
Was the colour thing quite a big thing?
Well, I mean, we certainly weren't watching it in colour when it started in colour, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, we would have been watching certainly the Pertwee's in black and white, and I'm not quite sure. I have a feeling that I was watching... Robot in colour. I don't remember seeing that in black and white. But I do remember the first time I ever saw Doctor in colour was I went around to a friend's birthday party, and it was episode 1 or 2 of Death to the Daleks. Because I remember all the kind of stuff in the sand quarries, you know, for the planet Exelon.
Yeah.
And it just really jumped out at me because I'd never seen, you know, any Doctor in colour at that stage. So I'm guessing we might have got a colour set in between Pertwee's last series and Tom Baker's first, because I'm fairly sure I saw Robot in colour.
I bet that was absolutely magical, was it?
Well, yeah, I wish I could remember it more.
Yeah.
More, you know, I wish I could remember it better. I mean, it was certainly magical to see the new Doctor. I mean, I didn't like him at first because I thought he was too stupid, but, you know, within a couple of episodes, I absolutely loved him, and I never stopped loving him, really.
Ah, cool.
And before then, you know, Pertwee, the only Doctor I knew, and perhaps the only one I knew of, because I can't remember when I first started getting Target books. I suspect Tom Baker would have started by then, so...
Mm.
And they always had a bit in the front, didn't they, about, you know, the changing face of Doctor Who, so I knew what was going on, but I probably hadn't... Although... I do have vague memories of the three Doctors, so in that sense, I would have seen the other two in action, but you know, not every week. So yeah, a great time. I mean, I think Pertwee's era, looking back on it, is perhaps the most consistent one of them all.
No, definitely. I mean, I think you start the 70s very serious Doctor Who, and it's Earthbound. And by the time it gets to the end of the 70s, it's ridiculous, and he's going to all sorts of random rubbish planets. You know, so it's the difference is huge, and there's a lot that sort of happens. You know, it's a 10-year period, so there's, if you know, nothing doesn't change or happen, it's going to be a bit boring, isn't it?
Yeah.
But you go from that very sort of serious Avengers kind of style. You know, when Pertwee starts traveling, it gets a bit more, not silly, a bit. It still has quite a serious edge to it. But I think that's what Pertwee always wanted, because he was a comedic actor. Was that he wanted his Doctor to be quite serious. Now, I know he has his jokey, jovial moments, but in general, Pertwee's 10 years, it is serious, and that continues into sort of Baker, although the Doctor does change into more of a comedic character. The plots and stories themselves are awesome. I mean, the first three series of Baker is, it probably is the best Doctor Who that we've ever had or seen. And then it becomes horrendous when Graham Williams and Douglas Adams get their hands on it. Which pains me to say, because they're a lovely set of fellas, and obviously Douglas Adams is a brilliant writer. But, I mean, it was awful. Most of Doctor Who, you know, after the sort of first 4 years, maybe, was horrendous thereafter, until the 80s happened, really.
Well, in our opinion, I mean, I think a lot, there's a lot of fondness people have for the Graham Williams era. Oh yeah, I've heard a lot of people say they like it,
really,
because it was a bit wacky and more jovial. But
well, you've got City of Death, that's good. Do you want to give me another one?
Do I want to give you another one?
I don't think there's any more, is there?
I quite liked Creature from the Pit. I didn't think I would, but then I went back and watched it and quite enjoyed it. I quite like Destiny of the Daleks, despite its obvious flaws. But, you know, it depends what you want from Doctor Who. And I personally, and perhaps you're the same, I don't like it when it's silly.
And it was horrendously silly. But it wasn't really the silliness as such. It was the stories were awful. The production values were nowhere near as good as they were.
Yeah, well, they were fighting against inflation. I mean, I think some of the stories weren't that bad. I mean, some of the scripts maybe could have been a bit better. Yeah, I mean, for me, it was a silliness. I don't mind Doctor when it's funny, when it's kind of witty in dialogue and stuff. What I don't like seeing is the lead actor being silly and being Tom Baker rather than being the Doctor, which is the problem I had with the arse end of Tom Baker's era.
Well, I mean, he is... When I go back and watch, you know, early Baker... up to the first three series, he's very serious. You know, he does have his little glimmering moments, but he's very serious, very angry, very aggressive a lot of the time, very much Capaldi-esque, and obviously that's where Capaldi has taken a lot of his character from, is Tom Baker, to the point where he sort of starts speaking a bit like him sometimes. But he was such a very serious Doctor, then he just... Because the reins get taken off, and he's been doing it for so long, he's become the Doctor, and the ratings are so big and huge, he just becomes, for me, detrimental to the show, and should have gone a lot earlier than he did. However, we would never had the JNT Tom Baker season, which I love. I think that's back to form after, you know, you got the first three or four seasons. The final season of Baker, for me, is kind of back to a form, but it's so different. It's completely different. I mean, that's the thing. When Tom Baker regenerates into the Tom Baker final season, the contrast from the whole of the 70s, because it's kind of very similar. If you go back and dip in and out, maybe apart from Pertwee's first series thereafter, you kind of dip in and out and you kind of get a similar vibe or feel, look, that kind of thing. But the 80s, man, it was like that was spun on its head completely. it was, yeah. I mean, that's the difference. I think when you come in as a producer or script editor or showrunner, as they're called now, and you want to make your mark, well, J&T made his mark. That is for sure. Graham Williams was a wet flannel, and the show got away with murder. And I think it needed that so badly at the time, someone just to make it different, take hold of it. And that's what happened in the 80s. 100% with J&T. And I know a lot of people don't like... I think when someone has balls and is prepared to make a change, it's going to annoy some people, isn't it? You can't make everyone happy. Whereas I think someone like Graham Williams, it was just... he was trying to make everyone happy or just ticking along or whatever it was. Whereas J&T, he was tasked with bringing the show back or dragging it into the 80s or dragging it into the future or whatever it may be. Hmm. And that must have been a huge shock. You know, the shock of going from Pertwee into Baker for people like yourself who sort of, and Mark and things like that, on Proctor Who, you grew up with Pertwee and that was a big shock when Baker came in because it was very different. Hmm. But there was nothing in comparison to that turn of the 80s of the J&T era.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was losing patience, to be honest, with Doctor Who when we got to stuff like Nightmare of Eden and
awful
Horns of Nymon.
Yeah,
and I couldn't quite believe what I was seeing when we got the new Starfield sequence, the synthesized incidental music, and a very plush looking and very well directed Leisure Hive. Of course, that didn't continue. I mean, I suppose the direction settled back down again after that, but certainly it felt like not a completely different show, but it was kind of like the third version of Tom Baker's Doctor we got, which was closer to the first one than the second one was. And yeah, although he doesn't look like he's enjoying himself so much, he's not enjoying himself at the expense of the programme, which I thought was happening in that sort of middle era of his.
Mm. But the good thing about the final season of Baker is that it's so apt. You know, when you look at it with hindsight, it's so apt. He's down and dour and a bit grumpy and all them kind of things because he knows it's coming to the end. That's the way I sort of see it. And it's another portrayal that makes it better and different. I think that's why I like it so much, because it is so different. And the 80s, I mean, most of Davison's stuff is great. I like it a lot. However, as I've touched on before, I mean, Colin Baker's era is just dreadful. I can't really put anything positive throughout the Colin Baker sort of era. And the more I go back to watch it and look at it, the worse it is. Like, I used to love Revelation of the Daleks. And we were reviewing it on Proctor Who. At one point on Proctor Who, we made it our number one story for some reason, by accident, I think it was. And I was sat watching it with... it was one of the ones where you're thinking, right, these guys aren't Doctor Who fans. I was sat watching it, Jim, the bass player from The Beggar's Bunce, and my girlfriend Anna. And it was one of them, I thought, oh, they're going to like this, actually, because this was a good one, this is a good one. And as you sort of get into it, actually, God, this is not very good. And they were laughing at it. And Jim's a big Doctor Who fan, you know, particularly the new series, and he's seen a few of the classics that I've lent him and stuff like that. It was embarrassing, and that's what sort of made me think, oh my God. And I go back and watch more of Colin Baker, and it's awful. Now, I'm not saying it's Colin Baker, because I quite like Colin Baker as a bloke, and I quite like him, you know, as an actor and all that kind of stuff. But, I mean, he was stitched up with a costume from day one. The stories are awful. It's so garish, and, yeah, they really did lose the way in Colin Baker for me. Thank God it was only 2 years. But, yeah, it started. Don't get me wrong, not all Davison stuff is perfect, but a lot of it is quite brilliant.
Well, there's a kind of consistency with Davison. I mean, there's the odd dud, but there's kind of consistent feel to Davison's era, I would say, until you get to his final story, which seems to be quite different, doesn't it, in tone. You know, the Caves and Design is very gritty compared to everything else, and his portrayal is quite different.
The best portrayal.
Yeah, perhaps as a reaction to that, and perhaps as a reaction to the fact that Robert Holmes hadn't written for his Doctor before and was probably still writing for the fourth Doctor.
Yeah.
But it works, and Davison rises to the material there, I think, although he's a good actor, and I think he was consistently good throughout, but he perhaps didn't have the most exciting set of stories. But I think an interesting thing happens with Davison's era, and I think it affects the rest of the 80s, and I think that's Earthshock. Because when Earthshock comes in, it's such a big hit, and it is the first
massive,
really gritty one they've got. You know, all those people getting killed in the first episode and being turned into sort of pizzas with name tags on them.
It is dark as out, isn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, culminating with a companion dying at the end, which is, you know, we hadn't seen that since the Black and White era, and you perhaps couldn't even count the two companions who died then as proper
companions. Really. Yeah, they've done a handful of episodes really, haven't they?
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of people wouldn't say Adric was a proper companion, but for different reasons.
They're just horrible people like me and you, Jim.
But I think what happens after that is, A, you've got a return to... Yeah, an old monster being brought back, and you've got a successful violent Doctor Who story. And I think when Sayward gets his feet properly under the table, that's what he wants to do. He likes bringing old monsters back, and he likes making things violent. Unfortunately, that leads to, ultimately, it leads to Colin Baker's first season, and I think probably contributes quite a lot to the fact that it was taken off air for 18 months.
Well, I think a lot of it as well. There was a harmony with JNT, Eric Sayward, and Peter Davison as a Doctor. He didn't want Colin Baker, and I think that's when I think he was a bit of saboteur, maybe a little bit.
Maybe
he was a script editor, and he really didn't want Colin Baker. I'd probably lean towards that because it's not that he's a bad writer or a bad script editor, because he had some fantastic stories in Davison's era, you know, and he wrote obviously some blinding stories, Urshock. But I think he was a bit of a saboteur with Eric Sayward for Colin Baker, because he didn't want it, he didn't like... When I see him in interviews, I don't know him, but he just seems a bit negative and whiny and like he hates it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, he fell over with the show big time, didn't he, by the end, so he...
Very bitter.
Yeah, there was no reconciliation there, so he's still in that state, and he doesn't seem to have made any kind of attempt to get over it, does he?
No, and I think if you have the attitude, which I think he will have done at the time, you know, when you're in a position of you're responsible for the stories, it's not going to be good for the show, is it? And it wasn't. And it wasn't until we got Cartmell that the best Doctor ever made was created.
Well, the interesting thing about that era is... You know, I'm talking about this Earthshock effect, you know, violent, and also, you know, Doctor Who eating itself and just getting stuck in its own continuity with stories like, Attack of the Cybermen, and this is turning off new viewers. Mm. Whereas when you got Cartmell, it really did feel fresh. I mean, I think the first series under him is, they don't quite know what they're doing and it doesn't quite work.
But they're getting there, and it's better.
Yeah, they've laid the groundwork, I think, and by... Seasons 25 and 26, it's become a new show, and it knows what it wants to do, and it's kind of honing what that is. And as it gets closer and closer to what it wants to be, it gets cancelled.
Yes.
And then, you know, that era is nipped in the bud.
I'd love to have seen Series 27.
Yeah.
That would have been absolutely epic. And we can only go... Well, we can only sort of surmise or guess. I know they tried to do a big finish, what it would have been, but that wasn't it. Do you know what I mean?
They can't hope to reproduce what it would have been, because everything is different. You know, it's a different medium for one thing. You know, the same people aren't involved, and you know, everything's moved on.
But I'd have been very, very excited to see that. But unfortunately, it was cancelled. But I mean, it was really comparison. The 70s, end of the 70s, it turned on its head completely in the 80s, and you had a completely different show, really. Mm. You still had the same heart as Doctor Who's always had, which is why you can watch any episode of Doctor Who, new or classic, and it's still the same show. They always kept relatively true-ish to the story, or well, to the character, really.
Yeah, I think there's a basic set of building blocks, aren't there, which Doctor Who has always had, and you know, they were brought back when it restarted, you know, in 2005. You know, you've got this wanderer in space and time, he's got a police box... You know, it's bigger on the inside, and you know, he takes someone with him on his travels, which you know is the best way to kick it back off again, and that's what they did.
Mm.
Which brings us neatly to the 60s.
It does, because we're going timey-wimey.
Yes, and that's how they started. I mean, what I always think about the 60s, particularly the Hartnell era, in fact, certainly more the Hartnell era, is the feeling of exploration, and the feeling that you're discovering this stuff along with everybody, including the Doctor, which doesn't last. You know, you get to a stage where the Doctor knows about stuff, and I never think that's as much fun as when you arrive there and you're learning with everybody on the TARDIS what's going on.
Well, it's what the companions do now, isn't it? They're that, but originally it was the Doctor. He was fresh out of his TARDIS, wasn't he? So, you know, they were all sort of discovering everything, really, rather than what you're saying there. Oh, I've been here before and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know, it's the companions he's telling all about it then. They're doing the learning. But, I mean, imagine watching that first, when it first came out.
Mm.
I'd love to have been a kid and just seen the intro music, all that kind of stuff. And this, I mean, I love the first episode of Unearthly Child. I think it's absolutely amazing.
Mm.
The rest of it's okay. But at the time, it must have been just something else. And then when the Daleks came out, I mean, God, it just must have been absolutely epic.
Mm.
I think that's what, you know, the more weight that's put on the show, so when you do get to the 70s, you know, it does change, particularly, you know, the first series of Pertwee. But it's already got, well, 7 years, hasn't it? 7 years weight on it. So it's quite a lot. You know, you've got to adapt and you've got to change, which is what they did when you bring in Troughton, really. I mean, like, again, that must have been mind-blowing. You know, the lead actor of a show that's 3 years old. And it has been taken to a lot of people's hearts, you know, with the people running with the Daleks and all that kind of stuff. And it's such an imaginative show.
Yeah.
It must have just blown your mind, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, you're right. Imagine what it was like to sit there and watch that, the programme starting from, you know, from that basic position in An Unearthly Child. I kind of got that feeling. I guess are you too young for The Five Faces of Doctor Who?
No, I had it on, I think I had it on video or something like that. I have owned it, I think.
Right. Well, when that came out, I don't think I'd seen any Hartnell, you know, except from vague memories of him turning up in The Three Doctors. And of course, he certainly isn't the man he was in that.
Mm.
And he's only on the screen anyway. But for me, it was almost like watching Doctor Who for the first time when I saw that. It was incredible to see this programme and all those kind of building blocks I was talking about being set up, and the Doctor being such a kind of grim sort of periphery figure. And it really was Ian and Barbara who, the people you were following, and to a much lesser extent Susan.
Yeah.
And then Hartnell is this kind of villain wandering about being rude to people and kidnapping, basically.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people think the next three episodes, you know, aren't anywhere near as good. I enjoy them because, you know, I think it's a great way to show all the characters because it's such a basic story about survival, you know, with humankind at its most basic level.
Yeah.
That I think you see how everybody ticks when you put them in those kind of stark circumstances. But I also, you know, episode one definitely is magical. The Unearthly Child episode itself is magical. But equally magical, I think, is the first time they land somewhere and step out. So yes. That moment in episode two, Cave of Skulls is in episode two, when they you know, they land, they step out onto what is a decent set. I think it's on film, isn't it?
No, it isn't. It looks great and all that kind of stuff. Mm. I think, you know, like I said at the time, it would have been amazing. But for me, right, you know, nowadays, it's very ugh. And it's quite, I don't know, it's just, I totally agree with what you're saying.
Mm.
But it's not, I'll never put it up as my favourite story, apart from episode one, which I adore. But I mean, he has a good run. He has some brilliant stories, does Hartnell, as does obviously Troughton. But I mean, that change, I just couldn't even imagine that the lead character, not just changing actor, but regenerating into a new face. I mean, that must have been massive.
Well, I think we're talking about Earthshock as being a kind of a turning point. I think the Time Meddler is another turning point in Hartnell's, Hartnell's one, because you see, obviously Susan is another one of his kind, but you see someone who's following a similar life to the Doctor. You know, he's got his own TARDIS, which must have been the most incredible cliffhanger yet when that happened.
Yes.
You see him going around there. He's got a different mindset to the Doctor.
He's a bit naughty, isn't he?
He's naughty rather than being evil, but he's kind of mischievous, isn't he?
Very mischievous, yeah.
But that also, although it doesn't change historicals immediately, it does eventually change them forever. Because, you know, this is a historical with a massive science fiction quotient, and then that's pretty much, was it Highlanders, I guess? Is that the last?
The only one which is, pure.
And Black Orchid, I suppose you could say as well. But, I mean, certainly for a huge stretch of time,
yes,
you know, the Time Meddler effect can be seen, you know, because whilst you may have a historical Earth setting, it's not just about the history anymore. You get a bit of both.
Because I think that's what it is, isn't it? It's science fiction, so you've got to... It is more exciting having some sort of alien threat in history.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, I quite like to watch them interact in history, but there's no real sort of protagonist. There's no real enemy. it's a tricky one to do, history, isn't it? You can only do so much, I think, with it without lobbing in an alien villain or something like that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, yeah, the TARDIS team can only sort of land, they get into trouble and escape. They can't really affect what happens because, you know, we know what happens. So as a, you know, a subgenre of the show, that was always going to die eventually. And the Time Middler has kind of put the stake in the heart, I think, and left us with one of my favourite formats, which is a pseudo-historical.
Yeah.
So that was quite a great moment. But I mean, before that, Doctor Who didn't really have much of a format, did it? I mean, the Daleks kind of railroaded it a little bit into the science fiction. And then, you know, with the advent of the Time Meddler and things like that, you know, it became a science fiction show and the historical soon died out after that. But before that, it was part educational, part sci-fi, part sort of morality tale. It was lots of different things. It didn't know what it was yet, and it was interesting to see it trying to find out.
But that's what it is. You summed up Doctor Who just then. I know you're saying it didn't know what it was. It kind of, it rather than have it all in one package, it had different adventures. This one's a history one. We're going to learn about history. This one's going to be about science and stuff like that. You know, it's like, but rather, you know, they just put it into one package, and that's Doctor Who, like you say, from the Time Middle onwards.
Mm.
But I think for me, like I say, changing the face of your lead character into someone completely different is probably, would you say, I mean, I'm going to go there and say it's the biggest moment in Doctor Who. It's someone changing, the character changing and giving the show, you know, the ability to go on forever.
Yeah, I mean, aside from the first episode, it must be the most important moment in Doctor Who, certainly in terms of its longevity, as you say, because if you'd had someone trying to be Hartnell, then you might have got a couple more years out of it, maybe. But once you get someone who is cast to be completely different, then, you know, that gives a shot in the arm to the show every few years. And it's always one of those kind of jumping on points, isn't it? And it was one of those kind of, I can't remember what the phrase is these days, a kind of a bank holiday moment, isn't it? Where it's a showpiece for the show. People are interested in it. People are talking about it. The press are talking about
it. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And it's suddenly
everyone's... A bank holiday? I've never heard of that before.
I don't think that is the right phrase, but...
It is now.
I think Stephen Moffat said something along those lines, but I think I've got it completely wrong. But you know what I mean. Anyway, it's that kind of big moment which attracts attention. And that happens every few years. And then it guarantees, you know, a bit more life after each moment. And then there's another one comes along, and then the next few years are kind of... interest is to an extent guaranteed. But the interesting thing about Troughton is that he's kind of bookended by two seasons of variety. Lots of different things happening in his first season when he's trying to work out the character a little bit. You get the last historical. You get the Daleks back again. You get spacey stuff going on. And then you get the monsters and the base under siege thing, where it became who's the monster this week and where are people going to be trapped trying to defend themselves.
Yeah.
And then when you get, you know, his final season with Zoe, it's back to variety again. When you get something as kind of space opera as Space Pirates and something as downright weird and surreal as a mind robber.
The final season of Troughton is so strong. It's class. I do like the way they did try out the beginning of the 70s in stuff like The Invasion and the Web of Fear.
Testing the format, aren't they?
Yeah, and it worked really well.
Mm.
Hence the sort of, right, this is what we're going to do when we start the 70s. But yeah, I mean, should we put some decades in order?
Mm.
So in first place, I'm going to go with the 70s.
Yeah, me too.
And then second place, I'm going to go with the 60s.
Yep.
And third place, the 80s. Even though weirdly, like I say, Catmull's 25 and 26 is my favourite Doctor Who, which I say quite a lot because it is. Mm. But I think the 70s is when it was it knew it was doing. It was strong. It had big viewing figures. Apart from the tail end, I'd say, pardon me, when it sort of lost it a bit and the 80s grabbed it by the balls again, the 70s was, when Doctor Who was Doctor Who. Mm. And the 60s, like we're saying, it was so new and fresh and brilliant, but finding itself. Mm. So I'm sure going through that journey at the time, it was amazing and fascinating, but we can only look back on it in retrospect. It's still awesome. It's still amazing.
It is.
But, you know, we know what we know now with the... I mean, my problem with Doctor Who is, for me personally, that I've never seen it sort of in order. So, like my cousin, you know, he would lend me videos or I would buy videos and I would watch different Doctor Who's depending on what was released, depending on what was on telly, depending on what he had recorded off telly. You know, so I didn't have a Doctor, really. I had all of the Doctors, all of the eras. So not only would Doctor Who change every week for me from the perspective of watching it in a series format, so Sylvester McCoy or Colin Baker, it would change for me completely a different era. So I would watch a Hartnell, then watch a Davidson, and then I'd go and watch, you know, Baker. It was just all over the place, which is why I have a generic sort of love of all of it. But it's not linear to me, really, Doctor Who. It's just stuff I've had chucked in front of me. And I'm quite grateful for that, really.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, you know, you guys, you know, yourself and Mark from Proctor Who, and Craig as well, you know, you guys grew up with Pertwee, for example. It changed massively. Then you were into Davidson and, you know, obviously Baker, Davidson, t'other Baker, Colin. And, yeah, and then McCoy. And you had all that sort of experience at an age where you sort of can remember it and understand it. And I was a bit behind you guys because I'm a bit younger. So, yeah, Doctor Who for me was all over the place. It was like, oh, have a go at a bit of that, have a go at a bit of that. And I love that about Doctor Who. But the show was always the same. The heart of the show was always the same.
Yeah.
And it still is, you know.
Yeah, no, it is, yeah. Hmm. Well, that's three eras we've discussed. There's a new era coming up, isn't there, with the news of Peter Capaldi leaving.
Mm.
What's your hot take on that then, Bob?
It's not a surprise. I mean, I think we've all been saying it, haven't we, that it's going to be when Chibnall starts that Capaldi would depart before that. I mean, I love Capaldi. For me, he's probably now taken my favourite new Who Doctor.
Yeah.
Although it's hard because I do love Matt Smith very much, but I love Matt Smith because he's very much like Troughton and McCoy. But I think as an all-round Doctor, Capaldi is brilliant. So I would like to have seen him possibly with a new writer. However, you know, I'm always quite excited about change. So, yeah, it's not a shock. All I'm excited about now is knowing who's going to be the next Doctor Who.
Mm. Yeah, it's not unexpected that he goes when Moffat goes. I think it's a slight shame that we won't see him under another showrunner, but partly because I think he's becoming a little bit too Matt Smith now, Capaldi. I think he's, you know, the edges that made him kind of different and spiky in series 8 have long since gone. And watching the Christmas special, the Doctor Mysterio Christmas special, much as I enjoyed it, I mean, that could easily have been Matt Smith's Doctor in that role.
Yeah, I agree. He still has his edges, and I think they need to be smoothed out. But I think that's what I do like about it, is because it's the development of his character, which I imagine have been an actor of his sort of stature, and a Moffat being, you know, a brilliant writer. This has probably been thought out from day one. Right, I'm going to be really grumpy like Hartnell, and I'm going to soften out by the end. I don't know.
I mean, it's basically what Colin Baker wanted to do, but didn't have the time to do it.
Yeah.
And perhaps didn't have skilled enough writers around him either, to be fair.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it is what it is. You know, we do have another season of him. I have a feeling it's going to be a lighter final series. I'm not alone in thinking that. It's not an original thought.
I've got a feeling it's going to be an absolute belter, personally.
Well, yeah, I hope it is. I mean, you know, I think we've said before on this that Doctor Who comedy is a little bit hit and miss, and Moffat's comedy and Doctor Who is no different. Sometimes I find it funny, sometimes I don't. And I think Nardole seems to be a more interesting character than I thought he might be. I think Bill looks like she might be amusing. But, you know, looking at the trailer, there seems to be quite a lot of drama in there as well.
Mm.
So maybe it's time to go a bit lighter. We've had two quite dark series, you know, with Capaldi.
When you say lighter, we're not talking, you know, light entertainment. I think you're talking, you know.
No, I don't mean J&T light. I don't expect Ken Dodd to turn up.
Why? I want Ken Dodd to turn up again. But yeah, I think it's going to be awesome. I think it's going to be a hell of a ride. And I'm looking forward to it. I just hope he doesn't do a crap Christmas special next year, because that's obviously going to be Capaldi's last, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to just, yeah.
Don't want it to be crap.
Series 10 and a Christmas special where he goes, which is risky, I think, to do that at Christmas. But, you know, that's what they did with Tennant, so...
Didn't do it Matt Smith. Well.
Yeah. So, you know, there is form there, isn't there? Well, I suppose it's New Year, wasn't it, for Tennant?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Because it was a two-parter over that period.
Matt Smith's regeneration story is rubbish. Like, it's all right, but it's not a regeneration story. Do you know what I mean? It's a bit meh.
Well, Well, I like the fact that it's a bit different in the sense that, you know, he just lives out the rest of his days on...
I know, but you want it to be on one planet.
I mean, it's the thing that annoyed me about that one was not really that aspect, which I thought was quite touching by then. But I think there was... I was getting a bit fed up with Moffatisms in season 6 and 7, but I think he kind of recharged when Capaldi came along, and I think the show was revitalised for the last 2 seasons. I really thoroughly enjoyed the last two. I was losing interest a bit with 6 and 7. So yeah, let's hope that continues, and it's another good one. I mean, 3 years seems to be the norm for the Doctor, so again, that's kind of expected. He might go, you know, Chris Chibnall's coming. You kind of expect him to have a clean slate, and that's what he's going to get, which will be good for him, I think, and probably good for the show, because it's another, you know, huge jumping on point. And if they're worried about losing viewers, then here's a chance for them to say, oh, that Doctor's gone that I didn't like so much. Or if they know enough about it to believe that they don't like what Moffat is doing, then they'll know that someone else is in charge of it, perhaps, and think, right, well, it's restarting. Let's get on it and see how it is.
Yeah. So... I've seen so many names being touted as the next Doctor Who.
I don't think there's a name that I haven't seen touted.
Everybody. Who was favourite last week? That dude, was it Q out of...
Ben Whishaw.
Yeah, and Chris, what's his name, out of that Mum and Dad show? He's left
Chris Akabusi.
That'd be amazing, wouldn't it? Ooga, 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 Daleks, come on then. He doesn't talk like that either. What's his name? The guy of My Family. He was quite funny. Oh, I quite like him.
Marshall, Chris Marshall, with a K.
Yeah, because he's left somewhere, so they're thinking it's him. Obviously, a lot of women being touted about, and a lot of people really wanting a woman as Doctor Who. I don't, as I've said before, at all, in the slightest. But yeah, I don't know. When do you reckon we'll find out? I reckon they're going to try, because filming doesn't start, in theory, on this is all rumour, on the series 11. Chibnall series until January, I think, next year. So if they're sneaky enough, they might be able to get through to Christmas and do it as a proper reveal at Christmas.
How amazing would that be?
That'd be the best. It'd be awesome. That's how Doctor Who should be anywhere. You know, it should be a surprise, this kind of thing. And if they manage to do that, that would be awesome. They probably won't. They'll probably announce it, you know, the next week or something like that. Then we've got a whole year and a half to wait till we see him or her.
Having said that, I'm not sure it ever has been a surprise. If you read the papers, I don't think a Doctor has ever turned up and not been pre-announced.
How good would it be if it was, Jim?
Well, it'd just be amazing. Absolutely incredible, wouldn't it?
Exactly.
You can imagine the ratings for that episode.
Yeah. Have you got anyone that you'd like to see in the role?
Well, I mean, let's examine it in a bit of depth, I think, before I start naming names. I mean, to me, it feels like a bit of a turning point now. I mean, with New Who, we've had, obviously, 4 men. One sort of middling age, I suppose, in Eccleston. 2 younger in Tennant and Smith. And then one, you know, quite a lot older with Capaldi. I do think it's time for something new. Now, that could be a Doctor Who isn't white, which I think would be an interesting thing to do. I don't think it's going to stretch anybody's... credulity with, you know, with the format. I mean, how could the Doctor possibly not be white? Well, you know, every cell changes, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The pigment of his skin could change very easily. That doesn't seem to be a big deal. It would also, in the current climate, raise the middle finger to all the racists who seem to be getting pandered to left, right and centre.
That'd be a goddamn good thing, Jim boy.
Well, it would, yeah. I mean...
I did American then. I was trying to
Yeah, that's what it was.
I know it wasn't very good, but that's what it was.
Are you going to spit some tobacco saliva into a
top? Ting.
Move that a little closer, would you? But I suppose there's, you know, with the current climate, and if you're worried about ratings, that might be a worrying thing to do. But, you know, to be honest, racist people are generally stupid, and I don't think many stupid people watch Doctor Who. So
racist idiots don't watch Doctor Who.
I don't think they do.
And if they do, stop f***ing watching.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't realise, Jimmy, you're not at a beep yet, so I thought I'd...
There'll be more beeps, don't worry. Yeah, I mean, with you, I mean, I'm not... We shouldn't pander to them, you know. If they watch a show and they don't like Black Doctor, they can f*** off and die as far as I'm concerned. So...
F***ing right.
That is... I don't think that's an issue, and it'll be an interesting thing to do, particularly at the moment, although you know, it's a little way to go, but I don't expect, you know, things are going to get much better in the next year or so.
God, no.
So that would be an interesting choice to make, and it seems like a good time to do it. So that's one thing. But female doctor. Again, I mean, it's, you know, there is an intolerance, particularly over the Atlantic.
Yeah, no, but...
There's
but
a lot of sexism high up.
I just don't know about this. I mean, we've talked about this on this show before, and I think you persuaded me that it wouldn't be such a bad thing. And I think I'm kind of trying to look at certain women in the role, and I'd probably like it. I think they'd do all right with it. I think they'd... I was completely adamant I don't want it to be a woman. My preference would be not to have it as a woman. But someone like, for example, I know that she keeps getting touted for it, Olivia Colman. I think she's a brilliant actress. I could kind of see her as Doctor Who as well, weirdly.
Mm.
I don't know. But it would be my preference. But
well, I think with Olivia Colman, for one thing, she's got a very small child now, so the kind of commitment involved in Doctor Who probably means that now perhaps isn't her time.
Yeah.
But, you know, is it the time for a female doctor? I mean, I don't think it needs to affect the writing. I think if you wrote Doctor Who and had a female actress, you know, a female actor and actress playing the role, I don't think a lot changed. But in fact, it could be interesting if you go back into Earth's history and have this a female figure trying to dominate the room like the Doctor tends to. That could be an extra interesting part.
I don't know. I kind of want to be more positive about it, but my preference would not be.
And I think what we should be aiming for, perhaps, is not, oh, it should definitely be this. I think what we should be aiming for is, well, Chris Chibnall, for a start, is going to have a vision. So,
yes.
You know, the choice is going to be up to him and how that fits in. You know, whether or not a female doctor changes that vision or doesn't fit in with whatever vision he's got is, I guess, doubtful, because I don't think it makes an enormous difference. It's his first season. Does he want to take the risk?
Mm.
There are lower ratings. Does he want to take the risk? I mean, I think what they will probably do is go for the Tennant format, you know, of a young, attractive doctor, possibly not a white one, but probably a white one. And yeah. Then a young, attractive female assistant. I think it's what they'll do if they're going to play safe. But if you want to put your stamp on a new era, if you want to really shake things up, then perhaps a female doctor might be it. But I think what we should aim for, sorry, just to finish this point.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
What we should aim for is the audition process may well have finished by now. But I mean, if you step back theoretically, you know, what you would like to aim for, I think, is that auditions are open to everybody, whatever colour, whatever gender.
And that's because that's what it has to be. It's based on the actor. So irrelevant of, oh, we've cast him because he's black, or we've cast her because she's a woman, or we've cast him because he's Asian. You can't base it on that. He's got to be the best man or woman for the job, irrelevant of, you know, sex or irrelevant of what colour you are.
Mm.
You know, you're not going to cast Lenny Henry, are you? Do you know what I mean? Because he's a terrible actor. Well,
he's getting better.
Is he getting better?
Apparently, I've not really seen him.
I wouldn't want him as Doctor Who. That's not because he's black. It's because he's not the right actor to play Doctor Who. Do you know what I mean? There's many a white actor that I would not want to see as Doctor Who as well.
Yeah, of course. I mean, thing about what always happens at this moment when the Doctor announces that he's leaving is that everyone's obviously is going to start suggesting who they'd like to see or who they think it should be, which is kind of fun and kind of annoying. But, I mean, there's so many people who have been touted, you know, actors and actresses have got nothing about them that suggests alien or Time Lord. That you think, whoever they are, whatever gender they are, whatever colour they have to have something about them that suggests that they're a Time Lord. And a lot of the names I've seen just do not.
Who would you like to see, Jim? Name your top three, your personal top three, who you'd like to see as the next Doctor Who. And yes, I said Doctor Who virgins, not the Doctor. I like to wind them up.
Who would you like to see playing Doctor Who in TARDIS? I'm not necessarily going to do it in any order, but I'm going to do it in category.
All right.
If we do go for a young white male, mm-hmm. I would go for Harry Treadaway.
Who's Harry Treadaway?
He plays Victor Frankenstein in Penny Dreadful. He's been in various other things, but that's the thing I know him best for.
No.
If we were going for a non-white male, I would go, again, from Penny Dreadful, actually, but he's been in other stuff. is Shehzad Latif.
Oh, I think you've said him before, yeah.
Yeah, who plays Jekyll in that programme. Mm. And he also plays, what's that daft bloke in, Toast of London?
No. I don't watch anything apart from Deep Space Nine right now, so.
So all your choices are going to be from Deep Space Nine?
Odo.
Anyway, he's a bloke in the recording booth when Toast goes in and does his little voiceovers.
Right, okay.
Stupidly, I've forgotten the name of the character, but he's quite funny in that. But he was also in Spooks for a while.
Mm.
Great act, quite a brooding presence as well. And yeah, I think one for the ladies and anyone else who appreciates the male form. So I think both of those would tick that box. If we're going to go female.
Don't say Miranda Hart. People have been saying Miranda Hart. She's terrible.
No, not Miranda
Imagine
Hart.
That'd be awful.
I think I've said these two already, but I'm kind of sticking by them. Mm. Rebecca Front or Keely Hawes.
Oh, Keely Hawes would be good,
Be excellent. I mean, I think Keely Hawes is likely to be too busy. Actually, I quite like the idea of Ben Whishaw, but I think he would be too busy as well.
Is he Q?
He is Q.
Yeah, he's all right, yeah.
But, I mean, I think we have to be realistic about who's going to put that kind of commitment in. Firstly, in the amount of months per year they'd have to do it and how many years they would be expected to do it as a minimum.
Mm.
I think Harry Treadaway, Shehzad Latif and Rebecca Front might be obtainable. I think the likes of Ben Whishaw and Keely Hawes wouldn't be, although I'd like to see them in the roles as well. So
yeah,
that is what I would say.
Well, I'm not ticking boxes, Jim. I'm just going to tell you who I would like to see as Doctor Who. And
okay.
Number one, Paul McGann coming back as Doctor Who. And this is absolutely feasible because he did a very short stint on television, and not a lot of people in the new world would recognise or, know who he is, really.
What, Australia and New Zealand? What do you mean?
No, Jesus. I meant the kids, the younger folk.
Oh, sorry. Oh, that new world.
You know, because to them, a lot of these younger people, Doctor Who's been going for 10 years. That's it.
Yeah.
Or just over 10 years, you know what I mean?
Mm.
Bringing back a man of such... He looks great. He's a fabulous actor. And I'd just love to see Paul McGann being the Doctor Who on telly properly, especially now. That would be, if that happened, literally, Jim, I would do anything for that to happen. It would be unbelievable. It'd be amazing. And all he's got to do, like Capaldi's done, is just say, I quite like his face. And that's it. I've said this before. Move on.
Tom Baker did it in the special.
Yeah, well, Colin Baker did it as well. He was a guard, wasn't he, previously seen in Doctor Who. So what I'm saying is, quite like his face, move on. It would work. It would work and it'd be amazing.
Okay.
Best thing in the world. I can't stop thinking about it now. That's it. Just Paul McGann. Sean Pertwee. I would love to see Sean Pertwee as Doctor Who. And not just because John Pertwee's his dad. Yes, that's a brilliant bonus. But I love Sean Pertwee. I think he's a tremendous actor. And
yes,
he'd be such a different Doctor. I'm not saying he'd be going around going, you're f***ing, like doing aggressive cockney.
Cracking heads.
Like you are when we're off air. But it's like, it just would be so different and brilliant. And I love Sean Pertwee. There would be by far, head and shoulders above everybody else. It would just be the best day if any of them two, particularly Paul McGann, got made Doctor Who. And third, Martin Freeman. For some reason, Hear me out, Jim. My rationale behind this one, and I'm nowhere near as excited about this as I was about the other two. I quite like him because he plays the same character in everything that he's in, The Hobbit.
Yeah, that's my problem.
But I like that character, and I think
bewildered everyman.
Well, I don't know. He's got a little bit of the McCoy's trouting about him kind of thing. I don't know. There's something I'd quite. Nah, actually, it'd be rubbish, wouldn't it? Yeah, you've just persuaded me. I've just started thinking about it in certain scenarios of severity, and he probably wouldn't be very good.
Well, the other thing is it's a busyness thing that I was talking about. I mean, if he can't find enough time to do three Sherlocks every couple of years, he won't have time to do Doctor Who.
The dude that played Merlin, who's been in Doctor Who, is in Midnight. I don't know his name. I can't remember his name. What's he called? I've watched all of Merlin as well.
I know who it is. I can't remember his name. But...
Yeah, well, him. Because he looks a bit older now, a bit more mean.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, he'd be pretty good. So that's my top three. Yeah, Paul McGann, Sean Pertwee, and Merlin.
And so you got a youngish one in there. And
God, I'm so excited about Paul McGann being Doctor Who again.
Well, don't get too excited because it isn't going
Nothing
to...
Nothing else will do, Jim. Nothing else will do. but yeah, there would be my top lot.
Okay, cool. Well, it's interesting. I mean, we, as you say, I think it'd be quite a long while before we find out. I mean, ideally, we would find out on,
awesome.
On the day.
It'd be so good.
They do have a chance to do it for once. So that would be amazing. But I mean, I suppose they like column inches as well, don't they, with the announcement. I don't know if they want to do a special programme.
Yeah, but imagine that if no one's literally found out, and that was the big reveal, was the actual episode on Christmas Day. I mean, people would watch it. I'm sure people would just watch it more than they would just like a random show, like when they did Capaldi introduction or Matt Smith introduction.
Mm.
People would tune in to see who the next Doctor Who is. I'm sure they would. It'd just be the best publicity thing they could ever do, if they can do that.
Well, they've just delayed the planned start, haven't they, by 6 months. So it was going to start in the autumn 2018, wasn't it, where we kind of expected it to start in April. I mean, in fact, there may even have been that. Maybe it never was announced, but that's kind of what we imagined would happen. I mean, either Chris Chibnall's busy or they haven't found the Doctor or they want to, you know, it gives them opportunity to do that, to do just that, to reveal the Doctor live
awesome.
In the programme. Which would be absolutely tremendous.
Have we just covered all of Doctor Who tonight, Jim?
I'm not sure we mentioned part three of The Mutants.
And also, I don't think we've talked about the Peter Cushing movies, but pretty much we've talked about the entirety of Doctor Who in under an hour, hopefully.
Yeah, well, there you are. No one needs to listen to any other podcast ever.
That's it. We're hanging up our hats and microphones. I really want to wear a hat while we do this, but I don't. I'm going to start doing that.
We'll drop the mic and walk off.
We're retired now. Retired podcasters. We're not. Please check out Proctor Here podcast and Quinoy podcast as well as this one. Right.
Cool.
That's us, Jim. It must be.
It must be. Surely it must be.
Mm. Well, it's been a pleasure as always.
Likewise, sir.
And thank you lot for listening.
As always, God bless you. We don't do this for our own benefit, although we might do. Even if no one listened.
It's not financial. We're just a bit lonely.
Yeah. We like to talk to someone. There's someone out there, isn't there, surely?
Someone else likes Doctor Who as much as I do.
We're screeching into the void, Bob. That's what we're doing.
Anyway, pleasure as always, and thank you for listening, dear listeners. I've been Bob Fleming from Proctor Who Podcast.
And I've been Jim Cameron from the Quinoy Podcast. And we look forward to having your company again in March. But until then, it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.